From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of May 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And Drew Lerner will be here to discuss the weather forecast. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, we'll have a discussion about yesterday's CFAP announcement from the United States Department of Agriculture. Those are the direct payments that USDA will be making to producers of all types across the U.S. in recompense for losses related to coronavirus. We'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's start with some CFAP clarification before I get to the interview with Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist from the U of I. You can think about this and then come back to it again later in our program. So for clarification's sake, this is the way the calculation goes for corn and soybeans. The payment maxes out at one half of total production. You compare that to 100% of total unpriced inventory on January the 15th. So anything that doesn't have a cash price related to it, basis contracts would count. Some other contracts will not. Take the smaller of those two numbers and multiply it by the payment rate. That rate is 33.5 cents for corn, 47.5 cents for soybeans. I gave you higher rates yesterday, but the multiplication just cuts those in half. You'll get two CFAP checks, by the way. The first will be 80% of the full amount. The second will be up to the remaining 20%, that depending on available funding, it could be prorated to a smaller amount. More with Jonathan Kappas a bit later.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn opinion three-quarters lower at $3.19.5. December there at $3.34, quarter lower, and March contract was unchanged today at $3.54. On its settlement price, July soybeans up 4.25 at $8.46.75. The November beans at $8.54, 3.75 higher. In January up 3.25 at $8.57. Bean oil 27 cents higher. Bean meal up 90 cents. July soft red winter wheat 15 cents higher for the day at $5.13.75. The hard red July up 11.75 at $4.53.25 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures were down $1.45. Feeders were off 292.5, and lean hogs down about 50 cents for the day. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for being with us. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start with some of the highlights you see for the week, including the support and resistance numbers.
Well, there haven't been a lot of changes. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give you the, this is, of course, monthly, a continuous monthly chart for these months. And I'm only going to give you the support and the first support and the first resistance number, and then a few other things of information. So in July, you've got support at 308 and resistance at 329. Crossover is 309 between the downtrend line and the uptrend line. Our trading range so far for the month has been 13.25 cents. So it hasn't been fabulous, but it's at least been more than December. December has a support at 325 and a resistance at 346 with a trading range so far of 8.75 cents. So it's been a very quiet month for new crop corn. When you look at beans, we've got support at 829, resistance at 866. And the range on beans was 29.75 for the month so far. So there's been some opportunity there. November, 836 for support, 873 for resistance. And it has had a 26.5 cent range. So new crop beans have been certainly a lot more active than the corn has been. When you look at Dow Jones, we have support at 22,551, resistance at 24,556. And we've broken out of that. And the dollar itself has basically continues to trade around the 99 area. So support is at 98.25, resistance at $1.07. And we look at managed money. Managed money is kind of interesting, Todd. Soft red wheat, we went from being 14,000 long to 10,000 short this week. Corn from 152,000 short to 226,000 short. So they're approaching levels where you would expect that we might see them start to turn around a little bit, but not quite yet. Soybeans, 8,000 long last week, 27,000 long this week. Meal, 7,000 short last week, 19,000 short this week, excuse me. And soy oil, 8,000 short last week and 3,000 short this week. So managed money is definitely moving around, and they're taking big bets on corn versus beans from the looks of it. Export inspections, wheat right now is just running 1% ahead of a year ago compared to 5% last week. Corn 31% behind, so it's improved compared to 34 last week. And soybeans 5% ahead, just the same as they were last week.
So you said that the managed money looked like it was making a bet on soybeans, and that was to the detriment, relatively speaking, of corn. Is that on the idea that there will be fewer soybean acres because the corn planting has gone so well?
I really think so. I think that, and especially, you know, after we saw crop progress this week, I believe that you've hit it right on the head, that they're looking at it and saying, well, it's pretty likely we're going to have all those acres that they were expecting. And you know how it is in the farm. Sometimes when you start to plant early, more corn acres actually get planted than what you expected. So that to me is exactly what I was thinking. I'd be betting that way at this point in time anyway.
What about exports? Anything in the news?
Well, you know, we're seeing some interesting things going on. You know, we've been seeing China buying more corn. We've been seeing China buy more beans. We, again, have seen China take beans out of the Gulf, out of the Pacific Northwest, out of the interior. And so those are all really good things. But one thing I thought was very positive this morning is that China corn futures really took a dive. And basically, explanation is that it's on the idea that importers are buying U.S. corn and they're going to be buying more, and that the state reserve sales are going to start soon. You know, they normally have their reserve sales in April and May. And, of course, that puts a lot of pressure on corn there, too. So I thought that maybe was just one good point to say, hey, this kind of confirms a little bit of what we've been being told.
What do you see out of Brazil and Argentina and South America?
Well, interestingly enough, and I understand this completely, farmers now are 80% sold on their old crop bean and 28% on next year's bean crop. You know, and that compares to an average of about 60% at this time and only 7% new crop. So they're way ahead. And it's because the real has just been dying, basically. 66% of their old crop corn is sold compared to 47%, and 56% of the new crop is sold compared to 42%. Now, there's one little wild card in the background, and that is that dryness in Mato Grosso now looks like it could take as much as 20% off the yield. There was some rain, some spotty rain, and where the rain came, if they got it, it might have been enough to stabilize it. But, you know, this for guys who didn't get the rain, that could become an issue, you know, with all the crop that's been pre-sold. And you look at Argentina, you know, you and I have been talking about these problems that they've been having on the Paraná River, and they certainly haven't changed. In fact, they've been even worse this week because they've been dredging the river, and now they had a big part of the riverbank collapse. And now they have to start cleaning all out. So that stops the dredging operations for there. And they have no timeline, they said, for when normal operations are going to return. So as of last week, a vessel carrying 1.8 million bushels of beans, and that's down from vessels that carried 2.2. That's what they used to load out there, can only load out 1.6 million. So before they need to go to those deep water ports to load up completely before they actually take off for the country they're going to deliver to. And this low water now in Paraná, on the Paraná River, is also affecting bean exports out of Paraguay. So a lot of the barges from Paraguay, which usually come down to the Port of Rosario, are stranded. And they said in Paraguay, usually exports wrap up around July. Well, this year it might not actually be complete until October because of how dry it is. Brazil has agreed, Paraguay and Brazil both have agreed to actually open the dam somewhat. All they did before was they just increased electricity production. So now they're going to actually open the dam somewhat, but there's not a lot of hope unless they start to get substantial rains. I mean, this is a 50-year level they've never seen. And so it's a tough situation down there all the way around. And unfortunately for them, it could be fortunate for us.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
And, of course, is Jackie Vick. She is with Total Farm Marketing. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, to go through the announcement USDA made yesterday about CFAP, the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program for farmers. It's not particularly difficult, though some of the calculations, Jonathan, up front were a little unique to get through only because they're coming from two different pots of money. So there's the CARES money that came from Congress, and then there's the CCC money that is from USDA, the Trump administration.
Well, so good morning, Todd. It's good to talk to you. And there's a couple ways to look at this. I think from the farmer's perspective, there's some fairly straightforward calculations, as you said. There's a couple things that may be a little challenging. From the sort of policy end of the spectrum, it is interesting noting just the broad swath of crops. The broad scope of crops, livestock, wool, you know, kind of the whole gamut of things that are eligible for payment. And as you note, again, sorting out sort of the policy buckets, if you will, or where the funding comes from. They're using $9.5 billion provided by Congress in the CARES Act, and then they're using about $6.5 billion from the Commodity Credit Corporation, those general standing authorities, the same kind of authorities they basically use for the market facilitation programs the last 2 years. So it's a blend of that, which complicates sort of the back end on some things. But from a farmer's perspective, they're not really going to – you've got a payment rate out there for corn that's built out of those two, and then which is what, roughly 67 cents a bushel. And so that side of it is fairly straightforward.
Yeah, and as you said, this covers just an incredible number of ag products. In fact, wool is covered. Was milk covered? Is that just looked at as dairy? Is that what I saw? And then it appeared that, you know, if you had mature cows that you marketed, in fact, I'm sure this is the case, those are covered as well. Feeder cattle are covered. Pigs, hogs, lambs, yearlings. You pick something and it's probably covered, with the exception, I think I made note of, hard red winter wheat and soft red winter wheat are not listed.
Yeah, so you're right. We're covering a lot of food and agricultural product. Just like I said, I mean, it's pretty fascinating. Just again, from stepping back from the actual payments and whatnot, just the policy realm of this, from all of the, you know, almonds and cabbages and strawberries and tomatoes, all the way down through, you know, different categories of cattle, hogs and pigs and so forth. Dairy is covered. There is the way I understand it, they're basically adding to the dairy margin program that was in the farm bill. And then among the row crops, yes, probably most notable are that the hard red winter wheat is left off. In fact, only durum wheat and
hard spring.
Thank you. Are included, and that's largely due, as I understand it, because they required a 5% loss threshold to get in, and so those varieties of wheat did not have the loss threshold on the market that we saw in some of the other commodities. Some of the usual suspects as well in the farm bill realm, peanuts and rice, aren't included either. So we're certainly seeing those commodities that are almost more directly to food have been, their prices have not fallen as far as some of the other crops. And so I think that's a big part of it.
Now, you told me Gary Schnicke will be writing this up, I suppose, for the Farm Doc website and for release in the future. But there is a calculation for this. I've looked at it and gone through it a couple of times. Do you want to run through what the numbers look like for corn and soybeans?
Yeah, so just, we'll definitely put it on Gary's shoulders, but we're working on a draft we hope to have out on Farm Doc Daily on Friday that'll have some more explanation around it. I think one of the big things that, other than the payment rates, is this this issue around what production is eligible, and it's basically grain held in inventory that has not been sold, or 50% of your 2019 production. So there is going to be a little bit around that, I think, that still is going to have to be sorted out. And then the other kind of component of this is they're making an 80% of it's going to be paid out up front with 20% held back, just to make sure they don't breach their funding limits under these two pots of dollars.
So my understanding, and you mentioned 67 cents up front, but my understanding is because it is either the smaller of these two numbers, total production for corn or soybeans, either one, or half of that is, or one half of the inventory held on January the 15th, and then you do the multiplication. So if it's 33.5 cents times those bushels for corn and 47.5 for soybeans.
Right. So I think just to sort of simplify, so the total payment rate for corn is 67 cents. I think our initial understanding, and we'll probably come back to more of this, is about 27 cents in that first round for corn. So it's basically 50% of that inventory, and then of the production not sold, and then it's 80% of that calculation to get there. So it's a little bit of a
yeah, it keeps dropping down.
Right. I mean, they're basically taking a rate based on price loss that they've calculated, and then they're backing it down using production, and then this 80%, 20% tranche.
Right. So just for clarification's sake, this is the way the calculation goes for corn and soybeans. The payment maxes out at a total of one half of total production. You compare that to 100% of the total unpriced inventory on January 15th. Now, take the smaller number and multiply it by the payment rate, 33.5 cents for corn, 47.5 cents for soybeans. Anything else?
No, I think that's the bulk of it. We're still trying to understand. I mean, we're more familiar, obviously, with the grain side of this, so I don't have a lot of great insight yet on the livestock, the cattle and dairy side of this, and that's probably going to take a while. I think some of the documentation, I think FSA, there's a webinar that's out there on YouTube that the Farm Service Agency put forward, which I think is very helpful. And like I said, we'll have some more information out on FarmDoc here as soon as we can. So everybody stay tuned. We do know you've got through August 28th for the sign up, so we do have plenty of time. The application must be submitted in person by mail, email to an FSA office by August 28th. So this is not something that has to be dealt with right away. Obviously, many are still trying to wait out the rain and get planting. So this is there's time to sort some of these things out.
Or they can start next week on May 26th. One of those, but those are kind of the dates, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
You bet. We'll have more to come. So thanks for checking in.
Jonathan Kappas is the University of Illinois Ag Policy Specialist. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Talk to me about the wet weather we've had across the Midwest. Weather conditions will dry out for producers who've really run pretty quickly this spring to finish up their planting season. North Dakota is the one place that's way, way behind.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I was just talking earlier today with a farmer just over the border in parts of Manitoba, and he was telling me about some of the folks in north central North Dakota as well as himself. And he was explaining that part of the problem was the frost didn't come out of the ground in some of these areas. And it hasn't been all that terribly rainy here recently, but the ground is like tundra. They can't run the tractors over it without tearing up all kinds of land and putting ruts in and all that stuff. So they're waiting for the ground to continue to warm up. Now, this was as of this morning, and I think that the situation is pocketed. Much of the northern plains are in better shape than that, but things are kind of changing a little bit. There's going to be more frequent storm systems moving across that area. And as that takes place, of course, we're going to add the moisture back into the soil, even though we get the frost out of the ground and better planting conditions temporarily. So there's a lot of concern that we may still have a problem up there, even though the temperatures are in the upper 70s and 80s each afternoon and a lot of wind blowing across the region right now. So it'll be an interesting watch, but just like you said a moment ago, we can get a lot of work done in a short period of time if conditions can just get just right. And I think that we may be able to squeeze the crops in up there across the northern plains right between storms here in the not-so-distant future.
Now, on the other hand, it's really saturated where I am. They'll need some drying time before they can get back into the field, even if it's for, you know, the 20% of the corn crop that's left to plant.
That's right. It has been exceptionally wet. Last weekend was really a punishment for the region. We saw moisture totals coming out of Missouri, and even for that matter, down across Arkansas and Missouri, coming up through the heart of Illinois. And then, of course, Michigan and Indiana and Ohio and parts of eastern Kentucky are all involved with the same rainy pattern that took place. Totals for the week have been running from 2 to 6 inches across some of these areas. And, of course, we've got the dams that broke in Michigan and causing serious flooding up there. Anyway, the bottom line is that we are too wet now. We've got 2 halfway decent days of drying that are underway right now. But as we go into tomorrow night, we're going to start a frequent succession of storminess again across the Midwest, and it's going to be very difficult to find a day in there that we can get any significant amount of work done. After that, as we go into the last days of May and the first week of June, things will be a lot better. But that's getting pretty late, and a lot of frustration going to be on the faces of our producers across the region.
And finally, do you have concerns about Europe at this point?
Yeah, my concerns in Europe are kind of switching a little bit. Earlier this season, we were worried about the southeast part of Europe because it was too dry down there, and it's still too dry today, but they're going to get a bunch of rain over the next couple of days. In the meantime, it's been drying out in northwestern Europe. It looks like parts of the UK, northern portions of France, Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, that whole area in the North Sea region has not seen a lot of good rainfall here recently. Now, it hasn't been as warm there as it has been certainly here in the U.S. In some areas. But it is not going to rain, and it's not going to rain for 10 days at least in these areas I've just described, and there's already some moisture stress showing up, and I think by the time we get to the end of this month, we're going to be looking at some rather significant drying in some of that region. I would be most concerned about Germany, because I think France and the United Kingdom will probably come up with some rain in June, but I think Germany is going to have a real hard time getting some more moisture. So we're going to be watching that area for sure.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. Do drop by the Farm Doc Daily website, I think on Friday. This week, Gary Schnitke and Jonathan Kappas will have an article, maybe Nick Paulson too, posted about the CFAP information. Maybe up before that, you can find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And I've already posted what you've heard today to our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you can find that information along with our Daily Ag programming, or you can listen to the Daily Ag programming as a podcast anytime you'd like using SoundCloud, Stitcher, the NPR One app, Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast. I'm Todd Gleason.